Welcome to Common Thread. We hope you find these lessons helpful, but also we'd like to get to know you. If you go to our website /newcomer, we'll send you an email, some things to read about the community, and an invitation to a personal chat. If you're here in Raleigh, maybe face-to-face. If not, on Zoom. We hope you will. CommonThreadChurch.org/newcomer. Okay, here's the lesson. We do a lesson around the same text. It comes from our ancient songbook, Psalms. This one is from number 90. It says, "Teach us to number our days well so that we gain hearts of wisdom." Teach us to number our days well so that we gain hearts of wisdom. So we come back to that text every year to think together about how we will focus this coming year on gaining hearts of wisdom, gaining hearts of courage, gaining hearts of virtue. How will we this year stir ourselves to the hope that is required to mount that effort once again? Because it takes hope to look forward and to ready ourselves. It takes hope to launch ourselves yet again on this core human quest, the quest of becoming our deepest and our truest selves. It takes hope to pursue hearts of wisdom, to pursue hearts of courage and virtue. It takes hope to come around yet again and recommit ourselves to the journey. If you get audiobooks from the library, Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, written in the 40s, 50s. It's on their always available list. It's, you don't have to wait. It's just always there. So if you've never read it, it is definitely worth reading, Man's Search for Meaning. And if you've read it, but it's been a while, it's worth another read. I read it again or listened to it again recently. The basic premise is this: we do not exist in this life to be happy. We exist in this life to create a meaning in our lives. Happy becomes a secondary, tertiary experience. We exist in this life to create meaning. Not, he says, to find meaning. Not, he says, to figure out meaning. Not to go to the right mountaintop or go to the right guru or go to the right preacher. Not to have meaning given to us, but rather to make it, to fashion it, to build it in our own lives. Now, at some point on the spiritual journey, usually this happens around midlife, we realize that whatever God is not an authoritative parental figure existing out there in the sky somewhere, handling the world like pieces, chess pieces on the board. That's a helpful metaphor at an earlier developmental stage in our lives, but it becomes unhelpful as we move further on in life. We start to realize that that idea of an authoritative parental figure is a faulty metaphor that breaks down in some ways that can become really harmful later in the journey. It's a realization that often happens during a time called the dark night of the soul, the great unraveling. It's not uncommon when we go through that very natural part of the spiritual process to despair in the midst of that time of darkness, to say it's all shit and throw it all out and say, "I don't believe any of this," shake our fists at heaven. That's a very common experience. But the despairing part is not the end of the process. On the other side of this great dismantling of these early imaginings that we have about God, there is a remantling process, a rebuilding process. And it starts when we begin to realize something different about the divine. The word God is so related to the guy in the sky with the beard that we almost can't even use the word God anymore. So we try and mix up the metaphors and talk about the divine or the uncontainable or that which is greater than. We begin to realize that that reality, bigger than can be contained in words or thoughts, exists within us. That there is in each of us an image. The early texts call it the image of God or the breath of God. We say that every time we begin, that we are, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine. There is something inside of us that is made out of the same stuff that the divine is made out of. You've said it many times, stardust and God dust. Well, along the spiritual journey, after the great deconstruction, that point begins to dawn on us. And we look up and say, oh, we make meaning. We draw from this deeper part of us, this truer part of us, to make meaning and to make our worlds. We are participants. One part of the spiritual tradition calls it co-creators. We create the reality in which we live with the divine, which means that the onus is on us. The responsibility is on us. We can't go to the bishop. We can't go to the preacher. We can't go to the book. We can't go to the guru. It's on us, but also the vision and the capacity is also in us. Ours becomes a journey of discovering the divine that is in us. So every year we come to this Sunday to recommit ourselves yet again to seeking, finding, discerning, drawing from, and building upon this interior divine light. We recommit ourselves to the journey and to the process and to the training required, which we call working the circle, to the training required to draw from that deeper part that is within us. Well, this year, I thought it would be good for us to come to this moment of recommitment, this plan-making time, this focus-shifting time, to come to this moment acknowledging that we collectively are facing some pretty stiff headwinds these days. And I want to talk about that today. I want to talk about the things that could potentially hold us back from our meaning-making purpose, the meaning-making reality that is this spiritual life. So today, I want to shine a light into the dark corners of our souls looking for cynicism. Shine the light into the dark corners of our souls looking for pessimism and hopelessness. Because that's where those hope killers sit. They sit in the dark corners. They try and stay out of our conscious awareness. They try and stay unseen, hidden away, so that we don't confront them, so that we don't challenge them. That's what we're going to talk about today. Now, here are the questions that we'll be talking about afterwards. In the lesson, I'm going to tell you a story. It's a story about climbing mountains, about false tops. It's about pinning our hopes on a thing, pinning our hopes on an outcome, only to be disappointed. And then when we have those disappointments, hope deferred feels like hope denied. It feels like hope crushed. And then I'll define cynicism and I'll define pessimism, because that's what happens when hope gets crushed. And then we'll think together about what we can do about it. So be thinking as the lesson goes on about real life examples, because today I'll be talking about principles. But when we make real life application, that's actually when the real learning begins. So be thinking as the lesson goes on about real life examples of what we're talking about. Okay, last year at this time, we had a little hope. We hoped that 2020, the year from hell, was finally over. And we hoped that with these shiny new vaccinations coming up in record time, that we hoped that with this upsurge in awareness of gender inequity and racial inequity, we hoped that with seeming that gentler heads were prevailing in our national politics, we hoped that things were fixing to get better. But some things have gotten better. You know, I was just reading up on the progress we have made against COVID. But it's not the kind of out-of-the-woods better that we had hoped for. So we come to a day like today when we focus on recommitting ourselves to the journey, as we do each January, and more than of a few of us are just not feeling it, not feeling like recommitting to anything. So I'm going to tell you a story. When I was in graduate school, I spent the summers as a mountain guide and as a river guide working in Colorado. And so groups would come to this company that I worked for, and they would come from Kansas, somewhere near sea level. and they would come to our base camp, which was at 9,000 feet. And they were already sucking air just coming from sea level to 9,000 feet, just getting there. But then after a couple of days on the river, we would climb them up to some peak at 14,000 feet. And so they would feel like death. Now, there's a funny thing about mountains. You can't see the top when you're on the mountain. What you can see is the next outcrop. So when we see the next outcrop and we're exhausted and we feel hammered, what we do is we think to ourselves, surely that is the top. And so we muster everything that we've got and we push ourselves past our perceived limits, and finally we get there, only to find it's not the top. And oh, the crush of the disappointment. But the guide, ever encouraging and uplifting, gets us up one more time, launches us one more time, calls us to dig deeply one more time, and so off we go to the next, also not the top. And so here's the thing about 14,000 feet. That's a lot of feet. And that means there are a lot of false tops. And so that process happens a lot of times, sometimes for 2 days straight. One, not the top, after another, not the top, after another, not the top. Now, over time, I began to develop a spot in the company, and it was to do most of these kinds of trips where we had groups of, you know, sometimes fathers and sons, and sometimes groups from, you know, just lots of different groups. And I would find myself always at the end of the line. So we would be walking up this mountain, and I was at the end. And I would always try and start off with a light pack, because I knew inevitably I was going to have to take stuff out of other people's packs and put it in my pack. So the role kind of emerged as for me to be the encourager, the prodder. And I kind of like the position, because it's where the "I cannot do this" stories are doing their best work in people's minds. But it's also where reframing people's stories can do its best work. Now, to be honest, I got more than a fair bit of cussing out. People did not like me in that position, but that's the power of stories. But I also got to learn how to massage and to rework and to rethink with people the stories that they tell themselves. I had one advantage over the folks who were sitting there on the rock cussing me out. That is that I'd done this thing before. I'd done it with scores of groups, each one in the same situation, each one sucking for air, each one feeling the same exhaustion, each one with the same hatred in their eyes. Why did I do this thing? But every time, every group, every straggler found they were able to dig deeper than they thought they were able to dig. When they were done, turns out, they had hours and hours left in them that they did not believe that they had in them. They had enough hours that there wasn't a single group that didn't get to the top. We were able to do this thing. Now, the thing is, sitting there on that rock, being cussed out, "I can't do it. I'm just going to sit here. Leave me alone." I'd seen that, and I'd seen it lots and lots of times, and so consequently, I had a story in my head that was different than the story they had in theirs. Now, here's the thing. None of us knows how much capacity we carry inside of ourselves. The whole point of stress camping, that was this company's niche, stress camping. The whole point is to explore the limits that we believe about ourselves. The whole point of doing this is to realize that those limits are often much further out than we imagine them to be, than we tend to live in our day-to-day lives. So we'd get to the top, and then we would drag ourselves back down. And then we would sit by a fire, or there was a couple of hot springs in the area. We'd go soak in the hot springs, and we would talk about what had just happened. And inevitably, the conversation would turn to our heads, the stories that we tell ourselves. And inevitably, there would be some kind of realization that there is pain, and then there's the story we tell ourselves about pain. There is exhaustion, and then there's the story we tell ourselves about exhaustion. There are limits, And there are the stories that we tell ourselves about limits. Well, I tell that story because 2021 felt like a whole series of false tops. The election might be the top. The inauguration might be the top. The vaccines might be the top. The first surge settling down, Delta, might be the top. And there's a good chance that 2022 is going to follow the same pattern that we followed in 2021. There's a good chance that 2023 will also. So today's lesson is about a coping mechanisms that we all carry in our brains. It's the cynicism strategy. It's the pessimism strategy. Pessimism is the story we tell ourselves that there's more bad in the world than there is good. It's the story we tell ourselves that the world is becoming worse and worse and worse every day. Cynicism is the story we tell ourselves about people, that people cannot be trusted, that people are bad to the core. People are, insert motive here, they're mean or they're stingy or they're dishonest. It's just the way they are. People will let you down. People will try and pull one over on you. People are just ignorant. People are just blind. People are just. But both of those, pessimism and cynicism, are defensive tools that our brains have cooked up for us to protect us. We get disappointed, and then we get disappointed again. We take a hit, and then we take a hit again. We get hurt, and then we get hurt again. We feel anger, we feel sorrow, and then we feel them again, and then we feel them again, and then we feel them again, one false top after another. And for a while we think to ourselves, okay, I weathered that one, I'll get to the next, and then it'll be okay. Then things will settle down. Then things will stop being this painful, this bad. But then it happens again. Sorrow and hurt and disappointment happens again. Now the thing is, sorrow and hurt and disappointment, these things are costly. They consume a lot of mental energy. They consume a lot of emotional energy. They consume a lot of physical energy. And consequently, it's very difficult to process these experiences, these thoughts, these feelings. And as we've seen so many times, our brains and our bodies evolved to work very, very hard to streamline the expenditures of energy that we spend in our lives. It's a hoard system resource pattern that our brains do. So consequently, to do that, our brains have developed this clever tool, a distraction tool. It's a not have to process these system costly emotions tool. Hey, our brains tell us after one too many false tops, do this instead, think this instead. Just start assuming the worst. Just start assuming there is no top. Assume that you're never going to get to the top. Assume that nothing will ever change. Because what is today is going to be tomorrow, and it's going to be that way forever. Just put your brain into that posture, have that mindset, and then here's what's going to happen. You're going to have a whole lot less disappointment. Just start off assuming the worst motives in other people. Just start off doubting people's sincerity. Just start off doubting that people are intrinsically good, and then for sure start off not trusting other people. It's a much better mindset, our brains tell us, to scorn those Pollyannas, to avoid them, maybe even to deride them. Bonus points, you get to show people how clever you are by going heavy on irony or going heavy on sarcasm, because then people will know that you will not be taken for the fool. No, no, no. You are too smart for that. So go to pessimism, go to cynicism, go to sarcasm, go to irony. Really, what our brains are telling us is just come to the moments of your life assuming the worst in everybody and everything. That way you won't be hurt again. That way you won't be let down again. And by the way, This process has the added benefit of giving you a little squirt of dopamine into your brain, a little bit of the feel-good chemical, because you get to feel a little bit smug. You get to feel a little bit superior to all those other gullible fools who don't take this posture. If you've seen Ted Lasso, you know, yeah, it's the hope that gets you. It's the hope that kills you. Now, the mindset is as common as the mindset is because it's readily accessible to all of us. It's wired into our brains. It's, again, it's a system resource tool. And it shows up in all kinds of hidden ways, even when we don't think we're being pessimistic. As I said, it lurks in the dark corners of our souls. Our brains gravitate to cynicism, gravitate to pessimism when they've been disappointed too many times. When we've been hurt, when we've been let down, one more false top. I'm just going to sit down on this rock, thank you very much, and you can just go away, Mr. Guide Man. And 2021 was that. Teach us to number our days? Come on. That we may gain hearts of wisdom, gain hearts of courage, hearts of virtue, recommit ourselves, get up and go again? Yeah, Mr. Preacher Man, here's what you can do. You can insert word here, followed by the word off. Cynicism is a protective shield. Pessimism is an ego defense. Sarcasm and derision and mocking and scorn, an armor. And the thing is, they work. They work for exactly what they're designed for. They do protect us from having to feel our hurt. They do protect us from having to feel our disappointment and our sorrow. But you will probably not be surprised, they come at a very high cost. They save system resources in the short run because all those feelings are very costly. They save system resources in the short run. They do distract us from the hurt, from the sorrow, from the disappointment. But by definition, when we nurture these thoughts, we systematically kill off hope thoughts. We replace hope thoughts with anti-hope thoughts. Again, save system resources, but at a high, high cost. Because it takes hope to come to January and to get up and recommit ourselves to the journey yet again. It takes hope to come after this journey because this one, becoming our best self, becoming our truest selves, accessing the inner light selves, this is not a false top kind of journey. No, it's a lifetime journey. And we get up and we go at it every year. We get up and we go at it every time. And we do it today and we do it tomorrow and we keep doing it and it never stops until we stop breathing. We recommit ourselves every January and we recommit ourselves every Lent and we recommit ourselves every August as we get ready for the fall and we commit ourselves every Advent once more into the fray, dear friends, once more. Let us mount up yet again on this journey and launch ourselves yet again onto this quest, onto this journey. But brains under the influence of cynicism, leave me alone. I'm just going to sit on this rock. And unchallenged, those pessimism thoughts, those cynicism thoughts will kill off optimism. We don't tell ourselves that's what we're doing. What we tell ourselves is that we're being pragmatic. What we tell ourselves is that we are keen observers of the way things are. What we tell ourselves is that we're grown-ups with an informed, grown-up worldview. And we feel a little bit of pride and a little bit of specialness because we feel super authentic and we feel super insightful and we feel like we are in the know. Add in a little bit of sarcasm and we get to feel witty as well, which makes us feel good, which again does save us from having to process all those hard feelings. It'll save us from using those system resources, but it also leads to, leave me alone. I'm just going to sit on this rock. Mountains to climb, be damned. Limits to exceed, be damned. Nurture our souls so that we can better our homes, so that we can better our schools, so that we can better our neighborhoods, be damned. A spiritual community to make healthier, be damned. I'm just going to sit here on this rock. In a 2009 study of 97,000 women, those who were high in optimism had lower rates of heart disease and cancer, had lower rates of mortality. Conversely, those with higher rates of pessimism and cynicism had higher rates of all those things. So yeah, it is a system resource-saving strategy. But it'll also kill us. So it would behoove us, I think, to think a minute together as we start this year about how to challenge those thoughts, about how to not succumb to those thoughts. Now, as we see so often, this endeavor is going to take a little bit of discernment work, because the standing against the hope-killing thought work is a little more complicated than it at first appears, because it can be quite helpful, quite pragmatic, to look ahead and foresee potential pitfalls and avoid them, to make an honest assessment of what could happen, what might happen, to foresee eventualities and then to cover those eventualities. And when we're doing that, it feels like we are doing the same thing we're doing when we're doing pessimism, looking for the worst possible outcome, working for the things that could go wrong. But that is actually quite helpful. It's quite helpful to figure out who can be trusted, upon whom we can depend and whom we cannot, and figure those things out so that we are prepared. So that makes this question, have I become too cynical, a question of discernment. It's a question of degree. The title of today's lesson, Have I Become or Am I Too Cynical, is a question asking, have I moved from this pragmatism to this dark pessimism? Have I moved too far? And a good way to explore that question is to ask ourselves, am I using this brain trick? Am I using it to protect my ego self? Am I using it to defend myself from pain? Or am I using it to help me plan ahead? And a corollary question that comes right on the heels of that one is, am I telling myself that I'm using this brain trick in a very helpful way, but really, in fact, I'm using it in an ego-protective way? Now, this is a query that takes a fair bit of work to figure out, but I'm going to suggest that it's worth the trouble of doing that work. It's worth the trouble of digging in to ask the question, have I moved too far on this spectrum toward pessimism, toward cynicism? It's worth the work. It's worth the work of asking ourselves, am I mounting this psychological defense? Or has this mindset, have these thought habits begun to hold me back from the pursuit of virtue, the pursuit of courage, the pursuit of deeper capacity? Are my thoughts driving a, I'm just going to sit on this rock response, a forget the world, I've got me, I've got mine, how that kind of response? Now, by any measure, these last 2 years have been really tough years. It has been exhausting to go through what we have collectively gone through. And it is very difficult to hold on to hope when we are emotionally exhausted and mentally exhausted and physically exhausted. It is very difficult to hold on to hope in those times. And preacher man can talk until he's blue in the face one more time into the journey, but shut up. Stress accumulates. Challenges that just keep coming and keep coming and keep coming leave us worn out and drained. Do that enough, let that build up for enough time, and it gets very difficult to even ask the question, have I become too cynical? Because we are just worn out. And when we are, it shows up. Sometimes it shows up by us feeling extra anxious. Sometimes we get extra apathetic. Other times depressed or feeling trapped or nerves on edge. Exhaustion is not an environment that is friendly to hope. Exhaustion is not an environment friendly to recommitting ourselves to the journey. Exhaustion is an environment that is very friendly to pessimism and to cynicism. A much better environment for exhaustion is realizing that the deadlines that we always used to meet, you know, we're just not meeting them the way we used to. Exhaustion is an environment much better suited to, you know, more absences, lower commitment, lower performance. And you might have noticed that during your 2021 life experience, that things that you just used to be able to muster the energy to do, you couldn't muster the energy to do. Well, the thing is, hope is energy intensive. And when you don't have the energy to muster, you can't muster it to challenge cynicism. You can't muster it to challenge pessimism. When we are exhausted, pessimism and cynicism just kick in. When we are exhausted, I'm just going to sit on this rock, leave me alone, just happens. So, before we can even ask ourselves if we become too cynical, we have to ask ourselves, am I too exhausted? Am I too mentally exhausted, emotionally exhausted, physically exhausted? And if so, here's a quick list. Tried and true tools that will help us when we're exhausted, when we default to the negative thoughts. So here are some good strategies. First, develop the thought patterns that return to the present moment. Learn to focus less on the false top and learn to focus more on the here, on the right now. We used to say as we were climbing all the time, you can always take one more step. You can always take one more step. Second, establish a rhythm of positive inventories, positive stuff inventories, regular times to think about and regular times to talk about. The talking part is important. Positive events that happen, we got to see them, focus on them, talk about them. Positive people in our lives, we got to see them, we've got to talk about them, we've got to focus on them. Third, rethink and restructure our days. For many, the great resignation that's going on is really a great reassessment. Figuring out stressors in our lives that we didn't think could be eliminated, that actually, when we think about it, can be eliminated. Rethinking and restructuring our days for a healthier, more balanced life. Fourth, a steady diet of healthy food and healthy sleep and healthy exercise. Fifth, a regular time of meditation. Sixth, authentic conversations with trusted spiritual friends, talking about the things that we're digging into in our own false selves. Now, the thing is, there is nothing new on that list. What it is a list of basic fundamentals. All of those things are embedded in Work in the Circle. In a sense, the exercise and healthy diet part isn't, but I think it's implied. Now, here's what I hope for today. Here's what I hope you don't hear. What I hope you don't hear is do more, do more, do more. That just isn't going to help. What I hope you do hear is do the right things. You hear me say this all the time. We have to say no to some things so that we can say yes to the things that will help us step back from exhaustion, the things that will help us step back from pessimism, the things that will help us step back from cynicism, the things that will help us develop hope. We've got to say no to something so that we can say yes to something else. None of us is sitting around with spare time in our pockets, spare bandwidth, spare energy. We've got to eliminate things so that we can embrace things. And this great reassessment that we're going through as a culture, as a society, is an invitation to say what matters for human health and well-being and what doesn't. So, once more into the fray means back to the fundamentals. Back to taking care of our bodies, back to taking care of our minds, back to taking care of our souls so that we are able to take care of our homes and take care of our friends and take care of our coworkers and take care of our schools and take care of our spiritual community. What I hope you hear today is once more into the fray slowly. Once more back to building to last. Once more back to the basics. Once more back to here now, small doable. Once more back to building solidly. Once more back to building to last. All right, we're almost finished. So here are the questions that we're going to be talking about afterwards. Nobody that went on any one of those trips that I led would ever have made it to the top alone. We made it because we made it together. Now, that announcement earlier about Club Day on the 23rd, it's a roundabout way of talking about recovering from exhaustion. That Club Day announcement is a roundabout way of talking about intentionally stepping back from cynicism. That Club Day announcement was about how we live beyond the limits that our thoughts impose upon us. Because all of those back to the basic things that we do, all those building solidly things that we do, all those building to last things that we do, all the here now small doable things that we do those things together, or odds are we don't do them. And Club Day is about together. It's about all those core practices finding a place to be with other people in the practices that are going to help us toward health and well-being. They're all about doing the right stuff because you do the right stuff better together. Do the right stuff so that we begin building resilience and capacity and hope back into our lives. We help each other figure out what can we say no to so that we can say yes to the stuff that builds hope. So I hope this year, as we come once more into the fray, that you'll think about coming on the 23rd. You'll think about developing a community around yourself of people with whom you can begin to explore the growth and development that are out before us. And I did a lesson last year that if you missed it, it's kind of a timely one. You might want to go back and re-listen to it. It's called Adapt or Die. So you might want to go back and listen to the Adapt or Die lesson, how we make these kinds of changes in our lives. And so, indwelling divine, may we be people of hope. May we live beyond the limits that are imposed by our default thinking. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your offerings. Everybody donates online now. So remember what I say about contributing to community. It's a great return on investment. When we give our time and our energy and our love and our dollars to the community takes those resources, amplifies them, and gives them back. We end up developing and creating the environment in which we thrive and grow. So we all contribute online. Go to our website at the top. There's a donate button. And in a moment, we're going to dismiss the live stream for you all. We're going to do What Are You Thinking here in the room. And here's the thing. I'm just back from the holiday, but pretty soon I think we're going to be ready for an online What Are You Thinking, so you'll be able to join in. But until then, today's questions are in the live stream notes, so I hope you'll talk them over at home. As we dismiss those folks, if you would, put your hand on your heart and let's remember as we go that we are, every one of us, carriers of the inner divine, carriers of the inner light. That means there is within us, it's there, love and joy and peace and kindness and goodness and courage, capacity, it's in us. And if you would extend your other hand to our city, let's look for opportunities to share those things that are in us with the people that we live and work and go to school with, looking for opportunities to repair and to heal our worlds. Amen. God bless you.
We'd love to connect with you in real life. CommonThreadChurch.org/newcomer. And if you'd like to take an ownership stake in the well-being of the community, we all contribute online. You'll find a donate button at the top of our website. See you next time. We'd love to connect with you in real life. CommonThreadChurch.org/newcomer. And if you